Verse 11. But when Peter was come to Antioch, I withstood him to the face, because he was to be blamed. Paul goes on in his refutation of the false apostles by saying that in Antioch he withstood Peter in the presence of the whole congregation. As he stated before, Paul had no small matter in hand, but the chief article of the Christian religion. When this article is endangered, we must not hesitate to resist Peter or an angel from heaven. Paul paid no regard to the dignity and position of Peter when he saw this article in danger. It is written, "He that loveth father or mother or his own life more than me is not worthy of me." Matthew 10:37. For defending the truth in our day, we are called proud and obstinate hypocrites. We are not ashamed of these titles. The cause we are called to defend is not Peter's cause, or the cause of our parents, or that of the government, or that of the world, but the cause of God. In defense of that cause, we must be firm and unyielding. When he says, "to his face," Paul accuses the false apostles of slandering him behind his back. In his presence, they dared not to open their mouths. He tells them, "I did not speak evil of Peter behind his back, but I withstood him frankly and openly." Others may debate here whether an apostle might sin. I claim we ought not to make Peter out as faultless. Prophets have erred. Nathan told David that he should go ahead and build the temple of the Lord, but his prophecy was afterwards corrected by the Lord. The apostles erred in thinking of the kingdom of Christ as a worldly state. Peter had heard the command of Christ, "Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." But if it had not been for the heavenly vision and the special command of Christ, Peter would never have gone to the home of Cornelius. Peter also erred in this matter of circumcision. If Paul had not publicly censured him, all the believing Gentiles would have been compelled to receive circumcision and accept the Jewish law. We are not to attribute perfection to any man. Luke reports that the contention between Paul and Barnabas was so sharp that they departed asunder one from the other. The cause of their disagreement could hardly have been small, since it separated these two who had been joined together for years in a holy partnership. Such incidents are recorded for our consolation. After all, it is a comfort to know that even saints might and do sin. Samson, David, and many other excellent men fell into grievous sins. Job and Jeremiah cursed the day of their birth. Elijah and Jonah became weary of life and prayed for death. Such offenses on the part of the saints, the Scriptures record for the comfort of those who are near despair. No person has ever sunk so low that he cannot rise again. On the other hand, no man's standing is so secure that he may not fall. If Peter fell, I may fall. If he rose again, I may rise again. We have the same gifts that they had, the same Christ, the same baptism, and the same gospel, the same forgiveness of sins. They needed these saving ordinances just as much as we do. Verse 12. For before that certain came from James, he did eat with the Gentiles. The Gentiles who had been converted to faith in Christ ate meats forbidden by the law. Peter, visiting some of the Gentiles, ate meat and drank wine with them, although he knew these things were forbidden in the law. Paul declared that he did likewise, that he became as a Jew to the Jews, and to them that were without law, as without law. He ate and drank with the Gentiles, unconcerned about the Jewish law. When he was with the Jews, however, he abstained from all things forbidden in the law, for he labored to serve all men, that he might by all means save some. Paul does not reprove Peter for transgressing the law, but for disguising his attitude to the law. Verse 12. But when they were come, he withdrew and separated himself, fearing them which were of the circumcision. Paul does not accuse Peter of malice or ignorance, but of lack of principle, in that he abstained from meats, because he feared the Jews that came from James. Peter's weak attitude endangered the principle of Christian liberty. It is the deduction, rather than the fact, which Paul reproves. To eat and to drink, or not to eat and drink, is immaterial. But to make the deduction, "If you eat, you sin; if you abstain, you are righteous," this is wrong. Meats may be refused for two reasons. First, they may be refused for the sake of Christian love. There is no danger connected with a refusal of meats for the sake of charity. To bear with the infirmity of a brother is a good thing. Paul himself taught and exemplified such thoughtfulness. Secondly, meats may be refused in the mistaken hope of thereby obtaining righteousness. When this is the purpose of abstaining from meats, we say, "Let charity go." To refrain from meats for this latter reason amounts to a denial of Christ. If we must lose one or the other, let us lose a friend and brother, rather than God our Father. Jerome, who understood not this passage, nor the whole epistle for that matter, excuses Peter's action on the ground that it was done in ignorance. But Peter offended by giving the impression that he was endorsing the law. By his example, he encouraged Gentiles and Jews to forsake the truth of the gospel. If Paul had not reproved him, there would have been a sliding back of Christians into the Jewish religion and a return to the burdens of the law. It is surprising that Peter, excellent apostle that he was, should have been guilty of such vacillation. In a former council at Jerusalem, he practically stood alone in the defense of the truth that salvation is by faith without the law. Peter at that time valiantly defended the liberty of the gospel. But now, by abstaining from meats forbidden in the law, he went against his better judgment. You have no idea what danger there is in customs and ceremonies. They so easily tend to error in works. Verse 13, "And the other Jews dissembled likewise with him, insomuch that Barnabas also was carried away with their dissimulation." It is marvelous how God preserved the church by one single person. Paul alone stood up for the truth, for Barnabas, his companion, was lost to him, and Peter was against him. Sometimes one lone person can do more in a conference than the whole assembly. I mention this to urge all to learn how properly to differentiate between the law and the gospel, in order to avoid dissembling. When it comes to the article of justification, we must not yield if we want to retain the truth of the gospel. When the conscience is disturbed, do not seek advice from reason or from the law, but rest your conscience in the grace of God, in His word, and proceed as if you had never heard of the law. The law has its place and its own good time. While Moses was in the mountain, where he talked with God face to face, he had no law, he made no law, he administered no law. But when he came down from the mountain, he was a lawgiver. The conscience must be kept above the law, the body under the law. Paul reproved Peter for no trifle, but for the chief article of Christian doctrine, which Peter's hypocrisy had endangered. For Barnabas and other Jews followed Peter's example. It is surprising that such good men as Peter, Barnabas, and others should fall into unexpected error, especially in a matter which they knew so well. To trust in our own strength, our own goodness, our own wisdom, is a perilous thing. Let us search the Scriptures with humility, praying that we may never lose the light of the gospel. Lord, increase our faith.